Welcome to Implementing Emotional Intelligence, episode 38 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owegon. In last week's episode, I talked about expressing emotions safely. In this episode, I'll discuss emotional intelligence, which is also known as EI or EQ, and which I think is defined best by Daniel Goleman, author of the book titled Emotional Intelligence, who defines EI as the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our own emotions, and to recognize, understand, and influence the emotions of others. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Viktor E. Frankl. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our freedom and power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom. The term emotional intelligence was created by two researchers, Peter Salovey and John Mayer, in their article, Emotional Intelligence, which was published in the journal Imagination, Cognition, and Personality in 1990. It was later popularized by Dan Goleman in his 1996 book of the same name. Emotional intelligence is also sometimes referred to as EQ, the emotional version of IQ. To best perceive and respond to the emotions that you and others experience and the impacts of those emotions, developing and utilizing emotional intelligence is key because when you develop your EQ, you are enhancing your ability to understand and manage your own emotions and how you act on those emotions, as well as to recognize and respond constructively to the emotions of other people. For leaders, having emotional intelligence is a powerful tool which can help build strong and cohesive relationships with others. And truly, that could be said for everyone, whether or not they're in a leadership role. There are five key elements to EI: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. Self-awareness, meaning the ability to be aware of one's own thoughts, emotions, and actions, helps us to develop our self-regulation. Self-regulation is the ability to respond thoughtfully rather than react reflexively to situations and the emotions those situations inspire. It is also the ability to identify when our actions are unproductive or detrimental and to cease doing them. Motivation is the ability to inspire oneself and others to accomplish and to improve. The definition I use for empathy is the ability to emotionally understand what other people feel, see things from their perspective, and to imagine oneself in their place. In the context of EI, empathy is also the ability to predict or perceive the impact of our actions on others. In my frame of reference, social skills refers to the ability to utilize conscious communication well and to meet others where they are when we interact with them, rather than where we might have imagined they would be or think they should be. And as you might imagine, it takes empathy to be able to do that. What I mean by meeting people where they are is essentially relating to them in their frame of reference rather than my own if mine is different. This helps people feel safe and connected with me. Mark Brackett is a founding director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence and author of Permission to Feel: Unlocking the Power of Emotions to Help Our Kids, Ourselves, and Our Society Thrive. He and his team have developed a system called RULER, a high-impact and fast-effect approach to understanding and mastering emotions. His advice is that the first step is giving yourself permission to feel. He also says it's all about taking that breath, pausing, and applying the RULER principles. Here are the principles the acronym RULER represents. R stands for recognition of emotions in oneself and others. U is for understanding the causes and consequences of emotions. L represents labeling emotions accurately. E is for expressing emotions appropriately. And the second R in RULER is regulating emotions effectively. Let's take a look at each of these. How do we recognize emotions in ourselves? First and foremost, pay attention. Be mindful in the moment of how you're feeling physically and psychologically and why you're feeling that way. I recommend developing the habit of checking in with yourself often, starting when you first wake up. Ask yourself, how do I feel in this moment? For example, occasionally I wake up just feeling crappy. Before I dive into that experience, I ask myself what that's about. Looking more closely, I might recognize that I'm feeling sad and my shoulder muscles ache. Next, I mentally step back and observe that from a distance so that I can get a clearer perspective and begin to understand the causes and consequences of what I'm feeling. This is a great time to go into the neutral observer perspective, which I've mentioned many times in past episodes of this podcast. I ask myself, what are the characteristics of that sadness? Does it actually belong to me, or am I feeling someone else's sadness? If it feels like it's mine, where is it coming from? A recent event? An event from the past? Something I dreamed last night? Do I need to give my sadness attention? Or do I want to put my attention elsewhere and see if the sadness leaves? Then I check in with myself about that physical pain in my shoulder muscles. What kind of pain is it? Does it feel like it's from an injury? Did I overwork my body yesterday? Is it from the way I slept? What I have learned from paying attention over the years is that when I wake up sad and my shoulder muscles hurt, it's usually because I've had troubling dreams during the night, which brought about the sadness and caused my body to tense up in my sleep, causing the pain in my shoulders. This is all part of figuring out how to label my emotions as part of developing my EQ. Before I learned to do this kind of self-examination and exploration, I would just immerse myself in the sadness and the pain, or at the very least carry it around with me all day in my subconscious, either of which would pretty much guarantee I'd have a lousy day. Now that I'm more practiced in my self-awareness, at least most of the time, I can make a conscious decision about where I want to put my attention and my energy, how I want to move forward, and how I want to experience the rest of my day. Once you have awareness of how you're feeling psychologically and physically, pay attention to when that changes and how it changes. Then explore why it changed. As you increase your self-awareness, you'll notice how your body reacts to your emotions and sometimes vice versa. When we feel under pressure or stressed, our heart rate will go up as part of the fight-or-flight response caused by the anxiety. We may tense up our shoulders, which tenses up our neck muscles and gives us a headache, which may cause us to get edgy or feel angry. That anger causes our muscles to tighten up even more and our heart to race even faster or our blood pressure to go up. I don't know about you, but when I have a lot going on in my life and I focus too much on all that I have to do and the short amount of time I have in which to do it, I can feel my heart rate go up immediately. When I notice that happening, I mentally step back and ask myself, what is the most important thing for me to do in this moment? And I put my attention there. This helps me to lower my stress and anxiety, which lowers my heart rate and helps me to restabilize. Everything I've just described are examples of most of the RULER principles. Recognition of the emotions I'm feeling in the moment, understanding the causes and consequences of those emotions, labeling emotions accurately, and regulating them effectively. The example I used didn't require me to implement the E principle, expressing emotions appropriately, although if I were in a relationship or I found myself carrying the sadness I had awakened with into my day, if I felt it was relevant to do so, I might share with those who I thought needed to know or who asked sincerely how I was doing that I was feeling some sadness that I woke up with and that didn't seem to have anything to do with anything currently happening in my life. Looking at a different scenario, if something happens that causes me to feel angry, I feel that anger in powerful waves, which I have learned to immediately step back from to examine, or I might be overcome by those waves and react thoughtlessly, which might cause harm to myself or others. Not physical harm, mind you, I'm long past the temper tantrum stage of my life, but I've certainly learned the damage that my thoughtless, angry words can cause. So I step back, take a deep breath to oxygenate my brain and lower my heart rate, and ask myself, what just happened inside me? What am I feeling right now? What caused these feelings? What do I need to do next with this experience? It may take me a while to figure that out. In the meantime, I might have to distance myself from the cause of that anger until I have the calm and the clarity to find my wisdom so I can mindfully choose the next course of action. Once I'm clear on that, I move forward. Usually that means I need to have a conversation with the person who was involved with the cause of my anger. I use the conscious communication tools that I described in episode 2 of this podcast. I try to speak from the neutral observer perspective, especially when describing my emotional reaction. I use I messages, which I discussed in episode 10, and I will be very clear about my boundaries, framing them as firm requests. That could sound something like this. I found myself feeling very angry the other day. After thinking about it, I realized that it was because one of my boundaries got crossed. My privacy is very important to me, and I thought you understood that. But when I learned you told people my private business, which I shared with you in confidence, I realized that you were not clear on that boundary and how very important it is to me. My goal is that after this conversation, you will be very clear about that and that you will respect my privacy from this point forward. That's important if we're going to remain close friends. I've also learned how powerful it can be for me to express my upset calmly, but with clarity and conviction. It has a stronger yet less destructive impact than when I vent with the full velocity of that raw emotion. Developing your awareness of what's going on inside of you and the source of that will help you to mindfully respond rather than mindlessly react. It will help you build relationships that work well. Managing emotions is especially important in situations when we're under pressure. For example, when we are giving and receiving feedback, meeting tight deadlines, dealing with challenging relationships, navigating change, or working with setbacks and failure. If we lack emotional intelligence, when stress rises, our brain switches to autopilot and has an inherent tendency to go into our fight or flight reaction, which more often than not causes us to act in ways we later regret. We've just looked at applying emotional intelligence with ourselves. You'll recall Daniel Goleman defined that as the ability to recognize, understand, and manage our own emotions. In using emotional intelligence with others, he described that as the ability to recognize, understand, and influence the emotions of others. Let's take a look at that. I hope you noticed that in the definition we're working with, it talks about managing our own emotions and influencing the emotions of others. That's an important distinction because we really can't manage other people's emotions, and trying to do so usually results in their emotions escalating. That said, there are ways we may be able to influence other people's emotional responses. To use EI with other people to recognize and understand their emotions, we need to pay close attention. We need to have our radar on, as it were, tuning in to the signals they give us, which they may or may not be conscious of. Those signals can be a change in their mood, a change in their tone of voice, a change in their demeanor, which can sometimes be as subtle as their eyes dimming when they've been offended in some way, or their face flushing when they're feeling strong emotion, and, of course, a change in their behavior. It also helps to be aware of patterns we've seen in the past, whether with that person or just with people in general. Recognizing these patterns can help us to predict possible emotional responses other people may have to situations. Here's an example of how I apply these understandings in my work. When I'm preparing for a mediation, I consider that since the people I'm working with are in conflict, in addition to the anger and possible hurt feelings that they have toward one another, they are likely coming to the mediation feeling some fear or anxiety about the process, how I will conduct the process, or the outcome, especially if they've never been in a mediation before. They may be feeling vulnerable and self-protective. Some people will be self-reliant in how they deal with those emotions. Others will want me to be their protector or even expect me to be on their side and advocate for them because of their perceived vulnerability. Some have even told me they felt betrayed by my neutrality because I wouldn't advocate for them, even though I had stated clearly that was not my role. Other people react to their fear and sense of vulnerability by trying to dominate and control the mediation process and the other people involved, including me. Knowing this about people's reactions to the prospect of mediation and recognizing the behaviors I just described are not helpful to the mediation process and are based in a need to feel safe, I strive in every way I can think of to help them feel safe, while avoiding any words or actions which could jeopardize my neutrality or their perspective of my neutrality. I can't make them feel safe, but I can likely influence them to feel more safe by the things that I say and do. I offer them the opportunity to have a free initial consultation with me, with both of them there at the same time, so that they can see how I am with the other person. This helps them to get a sense of who I am and the neutrality with which I conduct myself. I'm mindful of my choice of words and my tone of voice. Knowing that in the absence of information, people's imagination kicks in and they tend to fear the worst, I describe the process in detail, including what my role is and is not. I use a calm, grounded tone of voice that I hope exudes safety and internal strength. I strive to help them picture the experience so that they will feel less fearful. I ask open-ended questions about what concerns or questions they have. When we get to the mediation, I have the room set up to feel calming yet professional. I strive to anticipate and meet their comfort needs with comfortable chairs, beverages, and a box of tissue, since I've learned that many people, including men, will cry in mediation. I also have a separate space available, anticipating that either of them may want to have a private conversation or caucus with me during the mediation. If I have a private conversation with one of them, I will also have a private conversation with the other, because I know that if I only meet privately with one of them, either of them might develop the belief that I have become biased in favor of the person I spoke with privately. These are all examples of how I work to anticipate, recognize, understand, and influence the emotional reactions in my clients. In mediation, I pay close attention to their demeanor, body language, words, and tone of voice, watching for cues about what they're feeling in the moment. I'm mindful about these aspects of myself as well, and I sometimes consciously implement them to help influence the emotions in the room. For example, if I think it would be helpful for them to take a deep breath, I will take one, because people very often will unconsciously mimic each other's behavior. If I want to facilitate them talking directly to each other, I will sit back, creating the space for them to connect more directly, If I want them to feel my presence more, such as when they start to escalate, I'll sit forward and rest my arms on the table. If I need to interject into a moment of escalated emotion, I do so in a firm but calming voice, usually making a neutral observation followed by an invitation, saying something like, "Clearly you both feel strongly about this. Let's take a step back for a minute and take a deep breath so that we can think this through more calmly." Did you notice how in that last sentence, I didn't tell them what to do using words like "you need to" or "you should," but instead I used invitational "we" language. Knowing that in their escalation, they may have been so intent on expressing themselves that they may not have actually heard each other or understood each other clearly, I will take the opportunity of that pause in the action that I just created to summarize what I've heard, to facilitate their hearing and understanding one another, and to make sure I have understood them both correctly. They may not know where to take the conversation from there, so I might ask an open-ended question to get the conversation going again. Depending on where we are in the process, it might be something like, "What are your thoughts about what you've heard from each other so far?" Or, "After what you've just shared with one another, where would you like to go from here?" Or, "What else would you like each other to know that will help you move forward?" Being in a profession where I work with people who are feeling high emotion on a very regular basis, I can honestly say that practicing emotional intelligence is one of my most important tools. And that's not exclusively because of the emotions they're experiencing, but also because of the emotions that can be triggered in me in my work, and how critical it is that I be very conscious of what I'm feeling and how I'm conducting myself so that I can be of good service and do no harm. I'm not flawless in my practice of EI, and there are times when I'm emotionally unaware and make mistakes in how I respond to other people's emotions. It's an ongoing learning process. While I've talked a lot about how I apply emotional intelligence in my work, EI is a tool that can be utilized in every interaction. I invite and encourage you to develop your skills in EI, both within yourself and with other people, to help you build stronger relationships and to help you maneuver times of strong emotion well. You can start by paying close attention to your own feelings and reactions to life's experiences. Get to know your triggers and your patterns. Watching yourself from your neutral observer perspective can be especially helpful in this. There's no need to judge what you feel, as we are often inclined to do. That won't serve you well. Just observe. Learn what helps you to manage your emotions in constructive ways and implement what you learn. Next, start paying close attention to how people in your life respond emotionally to their experiences. Watch for those cues I talked about earlier, changes in their mood, their demeanor, their speech, or their behavior. Try to get a sense of what caused that. When possible, ask them what's going on for them. That could help both you and them to get some clear insights. Don't try to manage what they're feeling or how they're reacting to a situation. Simply see what you can create in the immediate environment or in the dynamic between you that might influence how they will respond. Telling a person to calm down, for example, can often have the opposite effect, while being calm yourself will more likely have a calming effect on them. Telling a person they can feel safe may or may not help them to actually feel safe. Demonstrating thoughtfulness about their safety needs may well influence them to feel safe more readily. There are so many ways to apply EI and so many different kinds of situations and relationships that can benefit from it. With some, you may have to work harder than with others, like with your angry teenager, for example. My experience has taught me that the situations that feel most difficult are often the ones where you will see the most benefit. If you want to learn more about EI, some of my favorite resources are PositivePsychology.com, the Institute for Health and Human Potential at IHHP.com, and the book Permission to Feel by Mark Brackett, PhD. There are many other great EI resources out there as well. If any of you who are listening would like to share your experiences with emotional intelligence, I would be delighted and grateful to hear from you. I'd love to do a follow-up podcast episode on this topic, comprised of stories about how EI has impacted people's lives. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. I look forward to hearing from you with your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.